This is a Bramble Jam podcast.
Get out of your seat, get ready to clap along. Dolly's back in the big time movies, and she's taking y'all to church. No, literally. Make yourself a joyful noise. This is 2011 and 2012. My name is Justin Kirkland, and this is my year with Dolly. Praise the Lord. Welcome back to My Year with Dolly, a podcast about Dolly Parton's life and career that I started this year as a way to get to know Dolly Parton a little bit better. Why? Because I grew up in East Tennessee, and my whole life I adored this woman, and I thought, if you like someone that much, then you should get to know the ins and outs about him. And now, here we are with just a few years left before, you know, this podcast is finished, or at least this iteration of it. And I know way more than I could have ever anticipated at the start. Like, way more. I was having a conversation with my partner this past week about the whole journey and what it's meant, and I plan on getting into that a little more in depth in the final episode, but it's funny going through this journey and reflecting on 2020 Dolly as I, you know, look at her past. Much of what she does now is this cutesy kind of grandma caricature shtick. But the more that you get into her history, the more you come to respect her as a shrewd businesswoman and an outspoken advocate who manages to offend very few in the process of standing up for what she cares about. But we'll save that full rundown for a few episodes later. This week is all about the years 2011 and 2012. There's been a few big moments for Dolly over those couple of years, including another massive loss and a new album. But what I was particularly drawn to in this two-year stretch is Dolly's return to the big screen. Of course, she's dabbled in TV movies for the past couple decades, but in 2012, Dolly made Joyful Noise alongside Queen Latifah. Like a few of Dolly's films, it's not particularly high art, but damn if it isn't a wonderful time. The film pits Dolly against Queen Latifah in the lowest stakes standoff you've ever seen. The two of them are very kindly vying for control of a church choir. And it's as innocuous, it's as innocuous and lovely as it sounds. Again, it's one of those moments where you realize that Dolly's credence allows her to do just about anything she wants. The $31 million box office is proof of that. But what's special about it is that Dolly hadn't been in a movie since 1992's Straight Talk. And it wasn't for lack of material. For this week's opening quote, I found this little blurb she offered about Joyful Noise in 2012. In this interview, she says, "Until something good like this movie came along, where I could basically play my age and be young in spirit, I felt this was the perfect script for me. I thought this character was all the things I believe myself to be." As for what that all means, well, you'll just have to hang out and listen. That's the point of the podcast. So prepare for some joyful noise and a big nod to America. We'll get there in a second, too. Now that we have the episode teed up, here's the quickest of rundowns. We have typically four parts: a year in review, where we'll do a sweeping look at a year or two in Dolly's life; a deep dive, where we take one part of that year and we break it down; and an album review. Sometimes we also have some parting words from someone whose life has been affected by Dolly. If you have a Dolly story you'd like to share, be sure and send it to myyearwithdolly@gmail.com. Those are the ground rules, so put your choir robes on, y'all. Keep your hands and feet inside the roller coaster car, be nice, and let's roll. The years are 2011 and 2012. These are your years in review. Breaking these 2 years down feels almost like there's two different themes, the music year and the movie year. 2011 was largely defined by Dolly's early summer album release, Better Day. At this point, the music releases from Dolly are fewer and farther between, but I feel like that's a good thing. Without the pressure of having to crank out albums, one, two, or, you know, we're going back to like 1967, like 19 a year, you end up with collections like Better Day, written entirely by Dolly, with the exception of one song that she co-wrote with someone else. Along with the album, she announced a world tour where she would go to, let me count, because I didn't write this down, 3 different continents. You know, I was peeking at the money that she made off of it, which, by the way, is well over $30 million. $30 million for a tour. And I was surprised to find out that Dolly made way more on her European leg of the tour than she did stateside. People over in the UK love Dolly. Her O2 Arena stop alone brought in over $2 million. There was one in Australia where she made over $4 million. It's insane how much people turned out for Dolly, even in 2011. To kick off the tour, she had a 30-song set in Knoxville, Tennessee, mixed with new and old songs. It was a testament to not just her extensive songbook, but the incredible amount of energy that she has to tour at this point, coming up on 70 years old. Later that year, she lent her voice to the film Gnomeo and Juliet, playing Dolly Gnome, cinematic classic. And in 2011, she also locked in a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Grammys. With another hit record in her repertoire, Dolly shifted gears a bit, going strong into 2012. She released Dream More, Celebrate the Dreamer in You, which is a book that expands on the 2009 graduation speech she gave at the University of Tennessee. She also mourned the death of Whitney Houston, nodding to her for the second life she brought to her classic, I Will Always Love You. In a statement at the time, she said, "Mine is only one of the millions of hearts broken over the death of Whitney Houston. I will always be grateful and in awe of the wonderful performance she did on my song, and I can truly say from the bottom of my heart, Whitney, I will always love you. You will be missed." The resurgence of the song was so massive that Dolly landed a third award for it from the Nashville Songwriter Association International Awards that same year, previously being honored for I Will Always Love You in 1992 and 1995. In very important news, she also made a cameo on The Bachelorette in 2012, and while it seems there can be no bigger appearance than that, did I write that? Did I seriously write that sentence down? I had to be kidding. Yeah, she appeared on The Bachelorette in 2012, but the real headliner of that year is her movie Joyful Noise that came out in early January. Listen, it's not the fanciest movie, I told you that from the jump. But when you combine Jeremy Jordan, Kiki Palmer, Queen Latifah, and Dolly Parton in one movie, you're going to have a great time. Before we get spiritual, let's take a quick break. Grab a snack or something, run an errand, you know the drill. We'll reconvene in fellowship here in a quick second. When I first looked at this week's episode, the loss of Whitney Houston jumped out as something worth tackling, but then I remembered Joyful Noise, this incredibly saccharine movie that stars Dolly Parton in her most recent major studio production. Yes, that is accurate. The last time that Dolly was in a major movie was 2012. Yeah. Sure, she's been in Netflix Christmas films and the like, and that you know, a couple years where there was an NBC movie, which are all wonderful and enjoyable. But this was the one with the stacked cast. Queen Latifah, Kiki Palmer, Jeremy Jordan, flanker in this story about a Georgia church choir that is in danger of being cut due to budget restrictions. Queen Latifah's character thinks that she should be in charge. So does Dolly's. The two of them have to work together so that the choir can appear at the Joyful Noise singing competition. While this is happening, Kiki Palmer, who plays Queen Latifah's daughter, falls in love with Jeremy Jordan, and his character is, you probably guessed it, Dolly Parton's grandson. The movie has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 33%, which is to say that it's not a critical favorite. But if you're going to watch a really sweet movie with low stakes, then Joyful Noise is far and away a perfect watch. Critical favor doesn't matter if the movie is just that enjoyable. But more than just being an entertaining movie, it has this way of revealing why we probably hadn't seen Dolly in films for a while. In the 80s and 90s, it became clear that while Dolly is a proud multi-hyphenate who is in film and music and television, it's music that she's clearly most invested in. Why do everything decently when you could do one thing great, and then on the rare occasion step into one of the other roles? That's all the more clear when you look at the interviews that Dolly did around the film. In a 2012 interview, same one that I referenced at the beginning of the episode, she said, "Many times, people tend to think you don't do anything because you're not on the big screen. But the truth is, I just hadn't had any good scripts come my way. Right after I did the movie Straight Talk, I was in one of those periods where a lot of women find themselves, being told I was too old to play young parts and too young to play the old parts." And if you remember, Dolly is already kind of picky about her movies. In older interviews, she said that she never really felt like her expertise was playing a character that required her to step outside of herself. I mean, think about Dora Lee from 9 to 5, Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. So often she's playing, you know, the kind of the role that she plays naturally, either as a singer or a buxom blonde. So she was holding out, and she always felt most comfortable when a part was an extension of who she was already. When you factor that in with Hollywood's distaste for women of a certain age, and I'm not being political, I'm just being factual, it makes all the more sense why Dolly's not around in film for a while. But Joyful Noise scratched all the itches that would get Dolly into a movie. It centers on family and faith. It makes a few body jokes that lets her character be a comedic relief. And most importantly, it leverages her greatest talent, music. Contributing two songs to the soundtrack, Dolly had the ability to make her biggest splash on the musical side of things. Though the story got panned pretty hard by critics, it was her and Queen Latifah's performances that stood out and got the most attention, alongside the musical numbers that featured Dolly's vocals. She was always willing to pivot, too. In this interview in NPR, when director Todd Graff was discussing Dolly's creative process, he said, "She would say, 'If you don't like it, I'll write another one. It only takes me an hour.'" It was kind of like a challenge for her, really. And amid all of this, I learned that Dolly can't actually read sheet music, and I don't know how I've gotten 41-ish episodes into this and did not clock that, but yeah, Dolly can't read sheet music. So this process of creating songs and getting them down and getting them recorded, it's all just organic song making, done by ear. Joyful Noise might be Dolly's last major motion picture release, at least for now. I'm not certain that we've seen her in her last film yet. But you can be certain, if we do see her again, it won't be in a role that isn't the right fit for Dolly, because she's not chasing movies. The movies are always chasing Dolly. Okay, for this week's album review... Sorry, I've lost my script for a second. This is unedited. For this week's album review, we're talking about an album called For God and Country. I love that Dolly loves a concept album. Granted, I have others that I'd call my favorite before I'd list For God and Country. But if you're looking for a good American-themed soundtrack to play for the 4th of July, this 2003 album probably has what you're looking for. Usually, I try to focus exclusively on the music, but I think it's important to remember a bit of what 2003 looked like to really understand the timing of this album. 2 years off of the 9/11 attacks, America was saturated with this sense of patriotism that the country hadn't really seen in decades. In retrospect, it kind of felt like this ribbon that was keeping us all held together. There was an appetite for this traditional kind of nationalism that highlighted how strong America was. Dolly, always inclusive without veering into that, Toby Keith, we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way rhetoric, responded in 2003 with this album of American pride songs. We'd been in Afghanistan for 2 years at this point, been in Iraq for a couple of months, and everyone was feeling the stress of being at war in the Middle East. Thus, we have this extra stacked album that runs 75 minutes in length, and that's a massive album of music. For the purpose of making a collection of American music for this time, I think it works perfectly. But it's also such a weird time period to look back on, because so much of the music on the album feels campy and over the top. It feels overproduced, almost too grand to be a Dolly album, if that makes sense. I think when we think of Dolly, we like to throw that grand word around, but after listening to so much of her music, it's not really Dolly's music that's grand, it's her appearance. Dolly's music couldn't be simpler, and honestly, her best stuff is the most simplistic because she knows how to get to the point without the embellishments. This album just feels so outside of who Dolly is, even though it's about things that Dolly cares so much about. Part of me wonders what my review would have been like in 2003, before wars dragged on for years and years on end. Maybe I would have embraced it a little more closely. Of the album songs, Dolly's revamped version of her own hit, Light of a Clear Blue Morning, is the one that resonates the most because it puts a new spin on an old favorite. As for the rest, she just feels a bit removed from the source material. And again, that's not to say that Dolly doesn't care for God or country, because we know she cares deeply about both. But there's something that feels two-dimensional about the album. Dolly's voice is going to sound wonderful on just about any song that she tackles, but it lacks the layers of her best album, especially considering that she was coming off such a monumental run of music from her bluegrass era. So when it comes to the short version of this review, fire up for God and country on Memorial Day weekend or 4th of July, but I'm not quite ready to put it on my personal list of Dolly Parton canon albums. With that, that brings us to the end of this episode covering 2011 and 2012. A big thank you to Bramble Jam, the network that hosts this gigantic project about Dolly Parton. A shout out to the Petersons, who allow us to use their beautiful music to open and end each episode. And of course, a big thank you to Dolly Parton. Without you, we wouldn't have any of this to talk about. I don't know about you guys, but tonight I think I'm going to fire up Joyful Noise for a rewatch, because it's been a minute since I've been able to take it in. But in the meantime, don't forget to subscribe and review if you haven't already. Thank you for listening to the end. We probably really should lead with that whole thing of you should subscribe, but, you know, I guess 42 episodes in, 41 episodes, however many episodes, it's probably a little late to be making a big change to structure. Come back here next week for the year 2013. I think it's a solo year. I also might have lied to you. No, 2013 and 2014. We're going to talk about some Dollyisms. And if you know what that is, good for you. And if not, well, how about this? It costs a lot of money to look this cheap. I need to work on my own Dollyisms. Y'all have a wonderful week. From my Brooklyn mountain home to yours, take it easy, take care of yourself, and be kind.
My Year with Dolly is hosted by Justin Kirkland and produced by Justin Kirkland and Brandon Gray. It's a part of the Bramble Jam Podcast Network. For more shows a part of the Bramble Jam Podcast Network, check out BrambleJamPodcast.com. To contact Justin with your Dolly story, email myyearwithdolly@gmail.com.